The opinions and commentary expressed in the following presentation do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, the Economic Club of Indiana, or the Economic Club's agents or sponsors. Support for the Economic Club of Indiana is provided by the Lumina Foundation, with a goal to increase the percentage of Americans with high-quality degrees and credentials to 60% by the year 2025. Focused on ensuring an accessible, responsive, and accountable higher education system.
Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. Today's presentation is from Aperio CEO Chris Barbin.
For those of you who haven't kept pace with rapidly changing technology, the Oxford Dictionary defines cloud computing as the practice of using a network of remote servers hosted on the internet to store, manage, and process data rather than a local server or a personal computer. I have to sit there and read that word for word because I have no idea about the cloud. Chris Barbin, our featured guest speaker today, is one of industry's leading experts on cloud computing. And I'm sure all of us look forward to his explanation on how the use of the cloud computing can be helpful to us in our respective careers. Chris is one of the founders and CEOs of, and now CEO of Aperio Inc., an information technology consulting company founded in 2006 in California that recently announced the expansion of its operations and the relocation of its global headquarters to Indianapolis. Yay. He has been hailed by computer publications for his industry expertise and for fostering enormous growth for companies like Dolby Labs, Genentech, and Qualcomm. His company has been featured by Cloud Computing Journal as one of the top 100 cloud computing companies in the world. Chris is a graduate of Bates College in Lewiston, Maine, and has also studied at the University of Sussex in Brighton, England. It is a special pleasure today to welcome a highly regarded industry expert who's made a significant investment in providing services out of our city. So please join me in welcoming Chris.
Thank you. All right. Can you hear me okay? Well, it is really great to be here. I am very honored to be able to be in front of this crowd. I asked our PR team and Steve when I got the invitation, hey, can you send me a little bit of detail on this club in Indiana? And so he sends it over to me, and I look at the previous speakers, you know, from Lilly and the future speakers from Anthem, and I said, are you sure they want to hear me? It's quite the roster of folks that you have here, and again, it's an honor to be here presenting to you. So I'm going to kind of speak in three parts. I'm going to give you a little bit of history and perspective on Aperio, kind of who we are, what we do, the space we play in. I'll probably spend 6, 7, 8 minutes there, and then I'm going to spend time on really what we think is the future of work, different work models, the evolution of the employee, and kind of get you to stretch your brain a little bit. And as part of that, I'm going to do a little bit of polling. So you may like your cake, but you're going to have to work a little bit. Because when I get smart people in a room like this, 500 smart people, 600 or whatever the number is, I like to get a little bit of feedback. And then we'll wrap up and do the 20 or so minutes of Q&A. And I apologize for the head table that my back will be to you. I guess I can't present this way. I'm a pacer, is what I said. And I guess in Indiana, that's a good thing to be. All right, so I'm pushing the clicker. There it goes. Let me get it right. Maybe not. And thank you for having me. There we go. Okay, so let me start by saying we love being here. We started the company in 2006, and it was in 2011 that we started looking around for a secondary location. We started the company in San Francisco, myself and three other co-founders. We had a small group of people here, three people, one of which is here today, special call out to Steve Pruden over here, who really embodied the culture of who we are, what we do. And we made a decision in 2012 to locate an office here, only our second office in the company at that point. And that year, we had a great arrangement, and it was kind of a trial. You know, could we build a significant presence here in Indianapolis? And so we quickly ramped the office to 20. And this year, we'll exit the year with just under 160 employees, with a goal and an arrangement to build our office here to just under 600 by the year 2020. And so a huge thank you to the state of Indiana, the city of Indianapolis, the Indiana Economic Development Corp, the Chamber, and Larry at Genovis. I really, really appreciate all the work you put in. We wouldn't be here without the effort of everybody on that slide. And again, we are thrilled. And I'll talk a little bit later in the Q&A about why we chose here. But to move your corporate headquarters, we officially made the announcement about 2 months ago. It's a pretty big deal. And we love the opportunity we have to continue to build our company here in Indiana and Indianapolis. This clicker just doesn't like me. Wrong way. There we go. Okay, I got to figure it out now. It only took two slides. So who is Aperio? What we are, who we are, we are a consulting and IT services firm, and that we are helping medium to large enterprises migrate to the cloud. And so what does that mean? We're helping people with cloud-based strategies, implementation services, application developments, and ongoing managed services of their cloud infrastructure. So cloud computing is only today about 7% of all IT spend. Over the next couple of decades, we believe it'll move to 60, 70, 80%. And companies, like you see here, a handful of our customers here in the room. So Eli Lilly, thank you, Mike, for being a great customer of ours. Car Auction Services, Simon Properties, Interactive Intelligence, all customers of Aperio. Plus, we also have folks like Cardinal Health, Coca-Cola, Facebook, Home Depot. But we help them make the journey to various best-of-breed cloud solutions like Salesforce.com, a huge employer here in Indiana. And so thanks to the Salesforce team as well. So that journey is a multi-decade journey. And if you want to think about cloud computing as the gold rush in IT, we're the picks and shovels. We're helping with that journey. And so it's been a really, really fun ride since 2006. There's been a lot of change in IT over the last couple of decades. So when you think of, you know, this is a mobile analogy of IT, of technology change. You know, back in the 80s and 90s, people had the StarTAC. Back in the early 2000s, you had the BlackBerry. And today, you have things like the Apple Watch. So I would take a poll for who still has a BlackBerry in the room, but I'm not going to embarrass anybody. Okay. And so I don't think everybody has the Apple Watch, but there's better options than BlackBerry. Hopefully, there's no BlackBerry shareholders in here. So technology has advanced quite a bit over the last 20 years. Unfortunately, consulting hasn't. You have the same kind of, you know, middle-aged male who walks in with an SOW. Boom, boom, boom. Consulting needs to be disrupted. So IT services and the consulting industry is ripe for disruption. Like a lot of people in technology these days, we're reinventing or disrupting something. This is what we're reinventing. The professional services and IT services industry is a $350 billion industry that really hasn't changed in 20 years. And that's what we're out to change. And the reason we're changing it is that there is a tremendous amount of IT waste. All of you, or many of you, have probably been involved in huge projects deploying technology that lasts years, sometimes 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, and they've failed. Careers have been lost. You know, stock prices have been hit. But big deployments, they're a thing of the past. These large-scale IT systems deployments have actually cost the industry over $1 trillion a year. So our charter as a business is to help people turn $1 trillion of waste into $1 trillion of value. How can we deliver IT systems more effectively, more efficiently? So our whole goal in life is really to take a next-generation approach to consulting, to IT services. Tying together unique IP, intellectual property we've built over the years, assets, bringing the best experts. We have about 1,300 experts around the world. And then we bring a very unique crowdsourcing platform. And I'll talk a little bit about crowdsourcing. It's close to 1 million members, designers, developers, and data scientists from around the world, where we are fractionalizing our work, and we're helping our customers solve those problems. We tie all this together with our platform, And in the end, we deliver value for our customers in weeks and months, not years or decades. So that's what we do, disrupting a $350 billion industry with a combination of assets, really smart people, and a crowdsourcing platform to deliver value in weeks and months. Okay? So what that's allowed us to do, this clicker is the bane of my existence today, what that's allowed us to do is to attract some great investors, early stage. We bootstrapped the company for about 2 years. We took early stage money from Sequoia Capital, one of the early investors in Google and PayPal and Cisco, one of the legendary investors in the industry. We then took some money from GGV, General Atlantic, late stage. And this past year, we raised another $35 million from Fidelity, Fidelity Investments out of Boston. We also had a seed investment, really put us on the map, from Salesforce.com. We were actually Salesforce's first investment. They are now one of the leading venture investors in tech. We did the first deal with them 7 years ago. And so some great investors, some amazing customers, as I said, a number of you in the room today, so thank you very much for your business. And that's allowed us to build our crowdsourcing community, but most importantly, you know, build our business very aggressively, very strong, double-digit growth, profitable, making money. Not every tech company can say that, which we're happy about. So the capital we have is strategic capital for us to continue to invest and build the business. Okay, so that's the Aperio commercial. More about that, maybe a little bit in the Q&A. If you have any questions, tweet them in or write them on the white card. So I'm going to shift gears. This is when you have to start working. So two of my favorite leaders, industry disruptors, I'm going to share. First is Jeff Bezos. This is not a picture of a thinner me. Some people joke. Actually, my wife thinks I look like Stanley Tucci. So Jeff Bezos. I love Jeff Bezos. And one of the things about Jeff Bezos, if you read this quote, that he is maniacal about is customer centricity. He puts the customer first. He wants to lower the cost of everything for the customer, whether that customer be an end retail customer that's shopping for Christmas, or an end customer of their cloud computing services, which is a $7 billion business for Amazon. But it's all about the customer. Everything revolves around the customer for Jeff Bezos. Again, one of the legendary leaders in our industry. Another leader that I love to follow, industry disruptor, has built dozens and dozens of business. Some have taken off, some he's folded, is Richard Branson. Well, Richard Branson takes a very different perspective. And he puts the employee first. He's all about the employee. The employee has to be at the core. If the employee's at the core and you think about your employees first, you'll take care of your customers. So those are two very different perspectives from two great leaders. So poll number one, who do you believe? Do you believe Larry or do you believe Jeff? I want a show of hands. Whoop. What is up with the clicker? All right, show of hands. If you were to bet, what is more important? Richard Branson or Jeff Bezos? Who is customer centricity first? Raise your hand. Raise them high so I can take a quick informal subjective poll. Okay, I'm going to say, the head table can help me here. What do you guys think? That's a, keep them up. That may be one third? Yeah? Okay. And we'll go to Richard Branson. Raise your hand if the employees should be first. Raise them up. One third, two thirds? All right. Well, so we're going to go with the, and then there's a lot of you who didn't vote, which I'm not sure. That's, what does that mean? Financials are first? Which it is the economic club. So it wouldn't be a bad vote. All right. So in the end, you saw my punchline. You're both right, kind of. I mean, our perspective, and if I were to lean personally, I lean employees first. That, you know, how we built our company, the value, we do team, customers, fun, are our three values we run the business against. Team, customers, fun. In that order, it doesn't mean fun is last, but fun is a key value for us, which I think was part of some of the invites that went out. But we also believe that the employee of the future will change dramatically in terms of how you look at, think about the talent that you attract to your business. So what do I mean by that? The war for talent is a super tough war. When you think about recruiting top IT talent, one of the reasons we moved to Indianapolis was that it's really, really hard to recruit top talent in San Francisco. There is so much money. Real estate is so expensive. The competitive landscape is basically impossible. Like, when you're competing with Facebook and Google and Yahoo and Cisco and people that have gobs, Square, some of these companies that are really legendary, changing their games, it's really hard. The war for talent is basically impossible right now, especially in some of those tech cities. And so when you ask, how much, you know, is that a top priority? It's a top priority for everybody. It's covered in all the major publications. HR will tell you, we did a survey, that about 25% of their budget is spent on recruiting and retaining top IT talent. So the war for talent is an incredibly tough war. And the war is only worsening because brick and mortar businesses are becoming software companies. It's Scott and Mark Andreessen, software is eating the world. You look at what's happening with the hotel industry. You know, there's a couple Marriotts here, right? Airbnb in New York City right now actually books more room in certain parts of New York City than the big hotel chains combined. You know, they're doing about $6 billion of throughput on Airbnb. So that industry, Marriott, St. Regis, the rest of them, they all have to transition themselves into being a software business. You know, Starbucks is one of my favorite examples. You know, Starbucks, I believe, in the end, actually over time becomes more and more of a software company. Raise your hand if you use the Starbucks app on your phone. So that's probably 25% of you. In 2013, there was $4 billion worth of prepaid cards put on that app. $4 billion were put on that app. It's pretty incredible. That app is actually getting better and better and better. If you're in certain markets, you could pre-order your Starbucks before you get in the door. It's amazing. Who wants to wait in the line? Boop, push my order. But they're also managing now probably a $6 billion float on that money. Pretty smart. They're becoming a software company. Honeywell, pretty traditional business. They're becoming a software company. Home Depot is transitioning. They actually have caught up to Lowe's in a lot of ways because of the way they're using technology as a business. So the war for talent is getting harder and harder and harder. And guess what? You're competing with people like Google. So one of my favorites. You know, Google spends almost $7,500 per employee per year on food. On food. That's a lot of money on food. And that's on top of that, they're spending things. They have conference room bicycles. They have volleyball courts. Like, this is what you're competing with. Perks to the tune of $75 million a year on food alone with gourmet chefs. So war for talent, some of the top technology companies in the world, this is what you're competing with. But actually, to the right talent, to your employees and to the next generation of employees, there are things that are more important. In the end, the next generation workforce is changing dramatically. They want to choose, and they are choosing, non-traditional paths, and they want to work very, very differently. So what does that mean? What does non-traditional path and working differently mean? I'm going to give you some examples. In our community, we call it Top Coder. It's the roughly a million members worldwide in every single country. We describe them in many cases as they have ODD. It's not ADD, but some of the younger technologists have ADD too. The ODD generation, they're on-demand digitals. They're digital natives. They're digital nomads. They want to work anywhere. They want to work on the tasks that are important to them. They want to be able to align to certain causes. They want flexibility. They want to be able to travel. Here are three great examples. So GoStar has worked on some of the best customers we've ever worked on. He lives in Milwaukee. He works above his wife's shop. He doesn't travel. He's made over $1 million working in our community. Working as almost as a freelancer. Because he doesn't want to leave Milwaukee. He loves it there. You look at Altheor. One of the things about Altheor that I love, he's one of the members of our community. He doesn't have a degree. No formal studies. Yet he's one of the best developers in our community. And is working on some of our government contracts right now. So DARPA and NASA and Sunshot and NREL, the Department of Energy. No degree, one of the best developers, works when he wants to work. And he's actually out of Europe. And then one of my favorites is Maestro. He's awesome. Really, guy out of Venezuela. Turned down jobs from Facebook and Google. Because guess what? He doesn't want to live in Menlo Park. You think he can afford to live in Menlo Park right now? A three-bedroom, two-bath house in Menlo Park starts at $2 million. Starts. Actually, a nice house would probably be $3.5 million. He can't make any money there. He wants to be around his family. He wants to work on cool things. He wants to actually be around his friends. So Maestro is in our community as well. And then this is where I said from Indy to Indonesia. One of the things that's blowing me away these days, these on-demand digitals, Indonesia, from a talent perspective, actually has some of the best design talent we've ever seen. The top three winners of our design contest this past year, all from Indonesia. Here are three great examples of people who have built a living, made a living, don't have any, they're not assigned or aligned to any one company, but they're working in the cloud, delivering technology design in the cloud from the comforts of their own home. Here are three great examples. Again, a couple of them with no formal training, but this is how they want to work. Okay, so that's Indonesia. So you're now saying, okay, so all these people are freelancing. Freelancing used to be a bad word. Freelancing used to have a stigma. Some people call it freelancing. We call it crowdsourcing. Other people call it the gig economy, the sharing economy. There's a lot of labels for this next generation talent model. And this whole model is being enabled by cloud computing. Because you can actually work on anything anywhere in the world with an internet browser and a connection. That's enabling this transition to this new work model. So crowdsourcing has been around 300 years. Galileo couldn't figure out how to properly measure longitude. It was a really, really tough problem. So the Board of Longitude was established by the British government, and they crowdsourced the answer. So an uneducated watchmaker actually defined it, figured it out. This was the first real crowdsourcing challenge, freelancer challenge that was thrown out there 300 plus years ago. Maybe you've seen the movie The Imitation Game. The Imitation Game, very, very similar. The Enigma machine, a whole team of people to try to crack Nazi Germany and what was happening, building really the first computer ever. They crowdsourced the best talent through a crossword puzzle. They put it in the newspapers. The people that were the best crossword they could do it the fastest worked on this team. Because guess what? In the end, one person isn't enough. A team of people that are trying to solve problems are better. Fractionalizing the work, putting the challenge out there, and getting the answer. That's crowdsourcing. That's what we call it. But it's been around a lot, 300 years. It's achieving critical mass in the enterprise right now. So the other question I like to ask is, if this is the case, if this is the direction, where is their loyalty? Like, I'm a team builder. That's what I like to do. I like to build high-class teams. That's one of the best things about being an entrepreneur is building a great company, building loyalty in your team. Be loyal to Aperio. So this is a picture of my son. This is William, the bigger one. And then that's my nephew, Colton. And so in the end, like, I'm not sure that he wants to work for Aperio. I know for a fact he doesn't want to work for Accenture or Deloitte. Right? But I don't even think he wants to work for me. So in the end, like, quick show of hands, what are the next generation of employees or the next generation of talent, what are they going to be loyal to? Are they going to be loyal to a company, to a project, to a task, or to a cause? Raise your hand if you think they're going to be long-term loyal to a company. All right, so we're all screwed. So no loyalty to the companies. What about to a project? Who thinks that long-term talent is attracted to a project? Raise your hand. Don't be shy. There's really no wrong answer here. All right, it's probably a couple dozen of you. What about loyal to a specific task? A bug fix, a design challenge, a specific small task. It could last a day, could last a week. And then how about a cause? There we go. Very good. Well, I personally believe it's a blend between, kind of a trick question, a project and a cause. A project and a cause. So it's a little bit of a called B and D. Let me give you two examples that I like. Hollywood. So Hollywood is a $550 billion industry. And they have projects that range from a $1 million movie, a $10 million movie, to one of the biggest movies of all time, Pirates of the Caribbean, was a $350 million budget. Okay? Anybody know the highest grossing movie of all time? Revenue-wise? Avatar, right here. Look at that. $2.2 billion, Avatar. These are, Hollywood's an amazing example of, these are projects. There's no loyalty to one studio that hammers out all the output. There's a movie. It's a cause. Maybe it's a collection of people. It's a director, a producer. I want to work with certain people. I want to collaborate with them. It's a great example of a $550 billion industry that is actually driven on a project-based mentality. They parachute in, they get a project done, they move on. Their loyalty is not to a studio. It's not to a company. It's a collection of individuals that want to work on a project. So that's one example of an industry that's huge that can coalesce around a project, a million all the way up to 350 million, produce revenue in the billions, but they're loyal to the project in that particular case, in that industry. The other one I love is, anybody, raise your hand if you're familiar with Hyperloop. A couple people, probably a dozen people are familiar with Hyperloop. So Hyperloop is one of my favorite, actually, causes that's also a project. Hyperloop is the brainchild of Elon Musk, who is one of the, as a CEO of Tesla. He's also the CEO of SpaceX. I think he's an incredible entrepreneur. But he has this concept that's being built out to put basically a vacuum tube to shoot people from San Francisco to LA at 700 miles an hour. People are like, holy shit, he's crazy. Well, in a way he is, because with SpaceX, he also wants to colonize Mars. But Hyperloop, what's amazing about this particular opportunity here is that the state of California thought it would cost somewhere between $50 and $100 billion to build a high-speed train line that would maybe go 150 miles an hour from San Francisco to L.A. The Hyperloop will go from San Francisco to L.A. in about 30 minutes. So you're like, that's crazy, right? And it is. It's 700 miles an hour. They are building test tracks right now. They have hundreds of people working on this right now. They're building a test track in Las Vegas right now. They're building momentum. They think there could be the first test track done within 2 years. Now, the cool thing about this is, guess what? The people that are working on Hyperloop, they are all freelancing. No one is taking a salary. They're the smartest minds in the world. There's about 500 of them. They are trying to solve a massive problem that will transition labor markets in California forever. That could transition labor markets around the world forever. But they're all working for a very small piece of equity in this endeavor. And they are a great example of a cause and a project that over time, as it builds momentum, they're going to work for Hyperloop. But right now, they're doing it nights and weekends. Pretty amazing example, right? So, there are lots of options, whether if you are in the education field and you're graduating a lot of people out of your schools right now, or you have younger employees, there's a lot of different opportunities for people to participate in projects and programs like this. 350-plus crowdsourcing platforms out there today, growing very, very rapidly. We're just one of them. Lots of different options, again, across the board to participate in these types of, I call them talent marketplaces. And so companies are using, or enterprises, many of you, are using these types of platforms to scale innovation, to scale capacity, to scale a level of skill that's really hard to recruit traditionally. And so the question is, shouldn't you take advantage of some of these types of platforms? It's not like, tomorrow you're going to go and create a competitor to Elon Musk and shoot a vacuum tube with people in it for, at 700 miles an hour. But there's a great and different and unique way of finding talent because of the power of crowdsourcing and the cloud. So there's a lot of people that are doing really cool things. We have about 150 customers right now. One is a large bank based in the UK, 2+ hundred years old, that are internally, this is a good first step, that are internally crowdsourcing talent. 20,000 people to try to find the best talent to go build IT applications. So they're internally crowdsourcing 20,000. They put challenges out there. A challenge could be something as simple as, building a mobile app that does X. The reward could be meeting the CEO. The reward could be an iPad. The reward could be you're way out, you're working somewhere in the middle of Europe, and you want to go to headquarters. So some people are doing internal crowdsourcing. That's a good way to step into this. That's a big bank. IBM is doing this. 350,000 employees. They have a Kickstarter-like campaign where they fund different applications, projects. It's crowdsourced funding. Where should the money go? Could be for hundreds of thousands or tens, hundreds, or low millions. And then once they're funded based on internal consensus, then they use all their resources to go build those applications. In this particular case, they built 30 apps in 60 days. It's a very different way of thinking about their own talent, their own labor, and they're going to start to turn this out as well. The government, this is the Department of Energy, one of my favorites. They're trying to drive up the consumption of solar energy in the United States. So they want apps that can be on your phone to monitor, track, manage the consumption of solar energy, to try to drive you to buy, put solar panels on your house, consume more. One of the things I love about the Indy Airport, all those panels that are out there. So how do we do more of that? Well, these guys, for $1 million, built 17 applications in about 9 weeks that drove that, all crowdsourced. Hundreds and hundreds of participants from around the world, not even U.S. participants, people who just were really excited about the cause to drive the adoption of solar energy. And that's the federal government. John Hancock, super old school legacy insurance company that is doing this. So, you know, over 9 months, 50 plus challenges, hundreds of participants from around the world. They actually promote their name in the challenges. They want people to know they're an edgy tech company. For less than $500,000, they've launched 5 major apps as a business. Old school, stodgy insurance company pushing the envelope because they can't find tech talent like this. So all these marketplaces have 6 things in common. I'm not going to hit these in the interest of time. But you know, I love to draw the analogy to, I travel a ton. So TripAdvisor is one of my favorite sites, right? There's some basic elements of TripAdvisor that are like these platforms. Hotels get rated, right? There's lots of feedback. There's a quality system built in. There's workflow built in. There's a mobile app. A lot of these platforms have those same types of elements. There's an amount of security and trust that gets built up in these marketplaces. So there are common elements in these crowdsourcing platforms when you're trying to take advantage of this next gen of talent that's out there. Probably the biggest example that's out there right now is this shift in IT services. So IT services, think of Accenture, Deloitte, PwC, IBM, HP Enterprise. These are big companies, right? So guess what? By 2025, those companies will have just under the top 40 IT services companies in the world. Just the top 40 by 2025 will have 5 million employees. So this is one industry. Top 40 will have 5 million employees by 2025. Every year, they attrit, on average, somewhere between 15 and 20%. So they're attriting, they're losing 800,000 people a year. So guess what? Generally speaking, what happens? They go to the other firms. So 40 firms, they attrit 800,000, they go back and forth to each other, they hire, fire, or resign, move on, up their salaries, up their pay. That is this $350 billion industry today. 6 of the top 10 that we're working with have all committed to moving anywhere between 10 and 15% of their labor model to these platforms. So this is an early indicator of what's happening in this space. It's one industry that's shifting more and more of their talents to these talent marketplaces. It's because hiring and retaining, the war for just hiring more headcount is not the war in this world. It's how do you take advantage of next generation labor talents or labor, people who want to work differently, work for a cause, work for a project. So they're shifting 10 to 15% by 2025, which is about $28 billion that are moving to these platforms. It's one industry, but that's the reason why I kind of pointed out what's happening with people like Hyperloop, what's happened in the industry in Hollywood, because there's more and more industries that are going to go in this direction. So what's an employer to do? You're looking at this, you're like, wow, that sounds kind of crazy. It's a bunch of freelancers running around. What about security? This doesn't make sense for me. Our view is that, guess what, in the end, you could become more attractive as an employer. You know, more food, better food, more chefs, more bicycles that hold conferences on them. If you guys haven't seen the show Silicon Valley, I highly recommend it. It's hysterical. You could retrain your existing talents. You could offshore. You can go to China. There's a lot of labor in China. You can go to India. Or you could go to the crowd. And in the end, the correct answer is E, all the above. So how do you take advantage of all of that, do all of that, but you need to be thinking about, we think you need to be thinking about weaving in these next generation talent marketplaces and models into your business. Because guess what? In the end, this is one of my favorite quotes, Bill Joy, who's one of the founders of Sun Microsystem. And no matter who you are, most of the smartest people work for someone else. That's probably the best quote. If you think about, like, you always want to find that next person. You can tap into them in these types of models. So, to summarize, we love being here. We are going to continue to build our business. It's an integrated talent pool where we're tying together our office here. We're going to continue to build our office here. But we're going to build out our technologists on demand. And our encouragement to you is that if you could do the same thing, you'll bring a level of innovation, creativity, scale to your businesses. You'll end up creating opportunities around the world, different platforms around the world. That aren't getting those opportunities today, because the combination of both is what wins in our view. You're going to be certain local markets you're going to pick in, you're going to be based in, taking advantage of these types of variable-based labor models. Again, gig economy, sharing economy, crowdsourcing economy is really, really important to the future. So with that, thank you. Q&A time.
Can you hear me?
Oh, good, it's on. Sorry. So as a reminder, use the white cards on your table to write in any questions or certainly tweet them. I will get us started. We'll get to RFRA in a minute. But selfishly speaking, I run a downtown association, so you talk about talent attraction, and you are right in the heart of downtown in the Pan Am building. So when you think about, you know, moving into a city, you know, what is it about that city that we need to develop that we don't already have to attract additional talent?
Yeah. So when we came here, I think I would describe it as we ran a 3-year pilot. Okay. We came here in 2012. We had a great core to build around. The 3-year pilot was all about, could we source great talent from the local universities? Could we retain people? So if you think about, I mentioned the retention stats. Our industry, the retention is generally 15% to 20%+. In India, that's in the 30s. Our retention rate here was 5% to 6%. So could you find them? Could you retain them? And could you do it at a cost structure that was competitive both for us and for the employee? And we checked all those boxes. And so for us, it was really understanding all those three in the trial period. But I would say disproportionately, it was this combination of finding talent and then the retention. I think there's a Midwest, I call it loyalty, that you don't have on the coasts. And that was a big driver as well.
So here's a quick question. How do you have fun at Aperio?
Well, all of our conference rooms in Indianapolis are named after craft breweries. I don't think our refrigerator has anything in it that's not a craft beer. That's thanks to Mike. I think we're a work hard, play hard culture. We're a very competitive culture. I have this notion, I call it the 8 out of 10 rule, that if you're not having fun 8 out of 10 days on average, then something's wrong. And your manager may not know, they don't have ESP, but it's also your duty as an employee to raise that. We spend way too much time working, more time, generally speaking, than with your family. So if you're not having fun, like, it's bad for the company, it's also bad for you personally, and you can't always expect that your manager would know that. So I think we keep the fun factor high because we keep that in mind. But, you know, we throw great parties. I think, like, if a peer doesn't work out, I can be a party planner. So there's lots of little, I think it's a lot of little things. Most importantly, it's getting the right people.
So we have lots of questions about RFRA coming in. So I'm going to ask, how did it affect your business and your strategy for Indianapolis?
Yeah, so when RFRA hits, it's certain, and we were in the process of finalizing our arrangements to come to Indianapolis and to name it a headquarters. And we pushed the pause button, being very candid. It was a big hit to what we thought was a great destination for us. And we took it very seriously. It was very disappointing. Obviously, there was a great reaction from local lawmakers. We think things, you know, cleaned up to a point where it allowed us to take the take the pause button off, and we went forward with our arrangements. But we also think that continuing to push the envelope with proper rights for LGBT. I mean, we as a company, we have a number of transgender employees. We clearly have a number of gay and bisexual employees. My brother's gay. And so for me, it was a personal issue, and we needed to see it addressed. But at the same time, want to continue to be part of initiatives, like Indie Competes, which we're a member of. We hope to do more with them. So we could push the envelope on this issue. But at the time, it was a big issue. And we would, had it not been addressed as swiftly as it was, that would have been a problem.
So a couple of questions about security. We have one in particular that says that I've been hacked twice, both in bank accounts. This all makes me nervous. Please speak to security in general.
Yeah, I mean, security and things like the Target breach and a variety of other security breaches like that, I think really shake everybody. So when you think about the enterprise being in the cloud, it's always a concern. I will say, though, that when we started the company almost 10 years ago, security was one of those top-of-mind issues. It's less so today. Actually, these providers, Google, Salesforce, Workday, Amazon, and all the best of breed providers, are actually way more secure. They have armies of people. They do this every single day, all day, more so than the traditional enterprise. If you're a traditional enterprise, whether it's a Cardinal Health or a Home Depot, you're not a technology company. And all these folks do. I mean, they're the new utilities of IT services. That's all they think about is security. And so while I think there's always risk, there are breaches, but generally speaking, these types of cloud platforms are more secure than the data center that's in your building.
So I could probably guess why you designated Indianapolis as your headquarter, but we have several people that
I was going to move over there, but I couldn't see you if I did that.
Several people want to know why you chose Indianapolis.
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned a big driver, again, was around sourcing talent, retaining talent, Midwestern loyalty. I will say we looked at a half a dozen different cities, and a thing for me was we had a group of four folks, Steve being one of them who's over here, that we knew were the heart of our culture and we could build around. I think as an entrepreneur, one of the things you think a lot about is building a great culture. And so it was a pretty good lead, I think, in terms of coming here, but we had a seed of people that we could build around. And so that was an additional factor on top of the different, talent, loyalty, the cost structure, the incentives we got, et cetera.
That's great. Well, thank you, Chris. We really appreciate your time coming to speak with us today. And I want to
You've been listening to a speech from Aperio CEO Chris Barbin, part of the 2015-2016 Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series. Join us next month at this time for a speech from Joseph Swedish, CEO of Anthem Incorporated. The Economic Club of Indiana is a production of WFYI Public Media in Indianapolis for Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations. Thank you for joining us.